Good afternoon, America, and good morning, Australia. I hope you're enjoying your Sunday afternoon over in the US. It's very chilly here in Queensland, Australia, and Kez tells me it's nice and warm in Western Australia. You're listening to Tony Lontis, and this is A Conversation with Kez, and I'm going to introduce you to my gorgeous co-host in just one moment. Listening live online on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, and Twitch, we have Payo ready and waiting to respond to your comments and questions with website links. And please don't forget to like, subscribe this channel and this show. If you've got any questions, don't forget to email us at info@radiotony.com. For all the information on our show, our guests, and my dear co-host Kez, jump onto radiotony.com or kezwickhamstgeorge.com and you will find all of our information there. Our replays of the live show go on to binge networks across the USA, and we have a live channel app available on LG, Roku, and Samsung with all of our shows on the Tony TV channel. Now, this series of shows is co-hosted with the gorgeous Kez Wickham St. George, who is a driver of her own creativity, and her passion is to inspire and nurture others to tell their stories. Her values are simple. When you touch a heart, you can change a life. And by encouraging you to write or journal, her belief is that you only add value to your life. And today, I have the gorgeous pleasure of having Kez all to myself, and we're going to talk about her latest book, The Cover Tree. And The Cover Tree is a story of a woman who lived, loved, and learned caravanning in the outback. Sit around the metaphorical campfire with author Kez Wickham St. George as she brings you on an unexpected journey through the pages of The Cover Tree. This natural-born storyteller will share tales from experiences and stories shared on her travels around Australia. Are you ready to go on a nomadic adventure in the Cover Tree? Now, before I introduce Kez to you and ask her a number of questions that I've got on my mind this morning, I wanted to share just a little bit of her fabulous new book, and this is from the prologue. The small fire lit outside my little home on wheels halfway across the Nullarbor Plains. Half orange flickers and shadows upon our faces. I raise my cup of Philly tea to the sky in gratitude. Thank you, I said out loud. Amen to that, echoed Eric, Doll and Geordie, as they too lift their tin mugs as a sign of respect. These are my fireside companions for the night. All of us are travelling through the Australian outback, all of us mesmerised by the universal light show on display. Yes, I'm travelling once again. The fine red dust that coats my skin and my hair is pure joy for me. The cold wind of a night desert wraps its frosty mantle around my shoulders, and I wait at once again to be part of the words, stories, poems, and descriptions I've heard or been told of on an Australian desert at night. Well, my friends, they have it right. Admiration for the world's glow sits deep in my chest as I wait for the universal sky show. The last of a deep sunset covers the scrub-covered land, where intense mauves are sinking into the night sky like a deep bruise upon the earth's soft face. The night sky suddenly comes suddenly upon us as the last white streak of an aeroplane flying to far-off countries fades away into the distance. And finally, the myriad dance of stars twinkles overhead, no longer concealed by the acrid smoke and yellow fog blanket that covers the city that we left behind. Out here, they shine faithfully each and every night. Most people in the city jungle fail to notice them, their days packed with the busyness of life. I've never thought this was in my future, especially now being in my mid-60s. Yet here I am, strong in all ways, and I am incredibly grateful for what I have. Lessons from the past have been well learnt. Some were unwanted but appreciated, and they too have taken on board in my journey of life. My future now investigates unknown adventures once again, this time with my new travel companion, Geordie. The miles have slipped away along the long Nullarbor plane. Thankfully, so too have some of the stress that was enveloping me since returning home from New Zealand. This is my new home, a 14-foot motorhome, and hopefully a new way of life. Good morning, Kez.
Good morning, and I love that author. That's a fabulous read.
I know. Let me tell you about this wonderful author. Is the Cockatrice your 10th or 11th? What number of books are we up to now?
We're up to, I've actually just finished number 11, but that was number 10 you were reading.
So number 10 is the Cockatrice. Goodness yep. me, I can't keep up. So the Cockatrice was only released in April?
Yes.
Wow. Well done. Can you tell the audience about what's behind the Cockatrice?
What's behind the Cockatrice? Well, it's the little blurb that's on the back of the book doesn't quite do it justice, but it's my own fault because I wrote it. But really is, as we get older, we all recognise life's lessons and we all become very wise. If we haven't learnt that lesson, it'll just happen again. And none of us want some of those lessons to happen again. So we either write about it, or we journal it, or we take it inside and we try and somehow fix it inside us so that it feels better. So that's what the journey is about. It's about this senior woman who's been through a fair few trials in her life. There's been death, there's been grief, there's been loss of a loved one, there's been a miscarriage, a stillborn.
Yes.
And in her life, deep in her heart, she's still grieving. So things that happen to her on the way, she decides to take them on board, fix them as much as she can, and then she realizes that she can't, that people have to fix themselves. So she goes on the journey.
You can only fix what,
So she goes on the journey. She loves caravanning, and she goes on that journey of wisdom, gaining more wisdom. But her journey, Tara is me. So Tara is, she wants to learn what other people are trying to say. Because when they tell their story, it doesn't have to be long and elongated. It can be very short. You know, some people have a very short vocabulary and what they're saying, like, I've been in the bush all my life, or what did you do in the bush? And you find that they do arts and crafts, and out comes this amazing story, but you really have to needle it out of them. And that's my joy, absolute joy of stopping off somewhere. And it doesn't, in Australia, I find people do live in the bush. And they do come out when they see a campfire or a light showing, and they do introduce themselves. And I just find it absolutely fascinating, the stories I've heard, and that's why I write.
Yeah. I'm not sure that everyone, for those of you in America, Australia is a massive country. So we're almost the size of the US, but we don't have the same population, so we have large stretches of unexplored space, and the Nullarbor Plain is a long space of nothingness and scrub, and you'll often hear people talk about the night sky, because in the Nullarbor, with that long stretch of nothingness, you can see the night sky in all of its glory. And I've been told that the Australian night sky is one of the most beautiful across the planet. Mm. And I guess that makes us incredibly blessed not only to live here but to have the ability to travel across it. And because there's a lot of our older generations and some of our younger generations too are having that nomadic lifestyle, jumping in a motorhome, jumping in a caravan and camping across this great country. So this book, The Cover Tree, is based on some of those stories you heard in your travels across Australia, isn't it?
Yes, it's based on the people I've met on my travels. It's amazing who you meet out there. Some younger families are raising their children traveling Australia, because yes, it's a well-known saying amongst nomads, you can travel Australia to the day you die, but you won't see all of Australia.
Yeah.
I've met many, many couples bringing their kids up. And no matter what sort of they're travelling in, they come in all shapes and sizes. Yes. But the difference in the kids, and we say this time and time again, is amazing. They're happy. Yes. They're happy playing with a stick in the sand. They're happy.
Yes.
They're happy finding feathers and stones and coming to show mum, and mum educating them on what the feather belongs to, whether it's a bird or a piece of fur, if it's a possum. The families talk differently. They relate to each other differently. And when it comes to the grey nomads, the seniors, like myself, they again say, we had enough. We couldn't take it anymore. You know, they will arrange to see their families in the cities when they're going through.
Yeah.
But the bush is where they live. And it's quiet. You know, my husband and I will often pull into a little bayside, especially on the Nullarbor, which is the 12-hour-long road when you're travelling.
Yeah.
We've taken a week on the Nullarbor, and it's a holiday.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just a holiday. So you make sure, I mean, there's plenty of little shops along the way. Well, sorry, there's two. There's one at the beginning and one at the end, and one halfway. So you make sure you got water and food. And there's no Wi-Fi out there. There's nothing. I think my husband can get one bar on his new phone. Mm-hmm. That's about it.
Yes.
But it's quiet.
Yeah.
It's just so quiet. And what do you do with quiet? What do you do with it? And that's the learning point.
Mm.
Not always. Not always. Sometimes I'm a daydreamer. And so the last book I wrote, Scribe, and I just finished it last night, was brought together on the Nullarbor, all the different scenarios, because you just don't hear people talking about their life. You hear people with a spiritual story. You hear people with a religious story. You meet all sorts. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's a bustling little highway, but you've got to know where to go.
I think we might have talked about this before, but you always felt safe travelling just with the two of you, didn't you? Like you feel relatively safe, except for moments in time when there've been a couple of shady characters, shall we say?
Mm, yeah. Yeah. Well, no one's 100% safe. Nobody, wherever you are.
Yeah.
So a lot of prayer. A lot of prayer. And it's like, you know, look after us, we're going into the bush. So, it's, how can I put this? It's when you go into a lay-by and you normally find that if people see your lights, they will never park alongside you. They'll go around you to the back or the front or the side.
Yes.
But you can see them in the distance. You know they're there. And that's the loveliest thing about it, is once someone pulls in, you'll find you bring others with you, or we will join someone.
Yeah.
But we never camp alongside unless you're in a camping ground.
No.
That's a bit of a no-no because you've got the whole bush to camp in. Yeah.
Yes.
So you just go do your own thing. Yeah.
We've talked briefly about your process for writing. Mm. I just wanted to delve specifically in the process that you used for writing The Cuppa Tree. Now, seeing that you're such a prolific writer,
Are there different ways in which you write different books? So, for instance, do you start writing from a middle point and then fill the book around, or do you just start writing from the beginning and go to the end? What's your process? And is it different for each book?
It's different for each book. It's exciting. Last one I just wrote, just finished, called The Scribe. I started off with a foreword, an acknowledgement, and then I found little bits in a diary I had written. So I just found the little bits and then I added to them. Yeah. Yes. So it was like, you know, finding that information I had diarized from a camping trip about 4 years ago. I actually stumbled on them and thought, oh, I haven't written about this lot yet. So that's what went into the book. Yeah. But I play. I mean, last night I sat down and rewrote the foreword because I didn't like it. So I rewrote it. Yes. Yeah, so I play. Yes. And if you don't treat your writing like fun, then it's not fun.
Yeah. And you're the author. You can rewrite, re-script however many times you want because it's your book. It's your story. You get to make the decisions about what you write and what you don't write. Mm. I know at the beginning of the puppetry you talk about a story with a publisher. You're happy to talk about that and the experience that you learnt from that horrible story?
It's all a learning curve. The whole lot's a learning curve. when I talk about a certain experience in my book, it's been a real experience for me. But, you know, you try not to be too harsh in your theory of whoever and what they are. You don't, you know, you're not there to destroy people. You're there to describe the experience. Because my experience, I've had four publishers, and the last one, she is absolutely fantastic. I can't complain.
Yes.
You know, she stands up and holds that light above your head and says, look at this author. So, you know, you can't complain.
Yes.
But the other ones, one was in England, so I didn't get to meet them. One was here, and she got very ill. So, you know, there's all sorts of things where you've got to be very wide in your outlook. Because you're going to meet, when you're an author, Tony, as you know, it's not just authorship, unless you want it like that. You know, look, I'm doing a radio co-host with you. I'm also doing a movie. You know, a movie lady come up and said, let's do a movie. So we're doing a movie. There's all sorts of things that your writing can lead to, and that's the fun thing about writing. You know, there's no full stop at the end.
Yeah. One of your other loves is encouraging others to write in the best way that they can. And that's one of your loves, isn't it, Kez?
Very passionate about getting people to write, yes. And yet they're not queuing up because people are frightened. I don't know why.
I was going to say, let's just delve into that fear that people have about writing and about telling their stories. But I think that it's important to note that for any one of us who's ever written, there's fear associated with that writing process. There's fear of failure, fear of success. There's lots of fears. So if you're thinking about writing a book, I would actually encourage you to have someone like Kez in your corner, because they've got the experience and you will be challenged. You will have fear. People will dissect your writing and say, hopefully they won't say terrible things, but people do. The best books in the planet will have their detractors, won't they, Kez?
Oh yeah. Yes. It's important you have someone in your corner. When I first started writing, I didn't know. So I was traveling. And my husband was working in different mine sites. So I just, you know, and they were very, very way in the outback. So I didn't have anyone to turn to. And most of the time I didn't have the internet. So I just wrote. And no one said to me, you can't say that. Yeah. You can't do that. And I do that to my clients. I say, well, can we put it another way? Because that's a bit harsh. You know, the other thing, Tony, is you've been on the other side of this. You're a writer. You're a published author. So what was your journey like?
So for me, as you know, my first book is a memoir. So it delves into the depth of darkness that humanity has. And if you think that you can write from a perspective of being mostly healed, which when I wrote the book, I could honestly say that I felt mostly healed, not completely healed. But when you start writing and writing about deep, dark trauma and tragedy, it's difficult. So you have to go back to places you don't want to necessarily revisit. And then you have to write in a way that is, I always wanted to write in a way that was helpful. So not from a perspective of blame, but from a perspective of this happened, this is what I went through, these are the things that caused me to learn X, Y, Z, for instance. And it was incredibly difficult, and I poured my heart and soul into that, and then you give it to an editor. And an editor comes along and they go, you can't say that, or you can say that. I want you to talk more about that. And I remember going backwards and forwards to my editor and going, but I don't want to write about that. And she would say back to me, but you need to, because it gives the story more depth. And I'm like, oh, I really don't want. And she would encourage me until I finally just wrote that extra bit that was needed in that chapter. And it was a difficult write. And so you pour your heart and soul into this book, and you think that you've done a reasonable job, and then you suffer from some backlash. And in my experience, the backlash was not from the wider world, but from my own family, that I dared to touch on secrets that I didn't actually know or understand were secrets. I was just writing from my own perspective about my life and what I remembered. The other thing that people might not realize too is that if you're self-published, then you have a budget. And sometimes that means that you have to write to a word total, because that's what fits into your budget. And then you have to chop things out of your book and then reconstruct it so that it still makes the story and still makes sense. And I actually found that really hard. And I know some of the criticism was that you didn't write about X, Y, Z. Well, I didn't write about X, Y, Z because I'm on a word budget and I've got to keep to that word. And so I think if you're trying to tell a bigger story, you need to allow yourself a bigger budget or find a publisher who is willing to take your work on. For a lot of us, self-publishing is the way to go, isn't it, Kez? Because it gives you that control over your narrative and your story.
I never done it once. I'll never, ever do it again. I don't encourage it. And I know I could get my hand slapped for that, but it's hard work. I mean, you've done the job.
It is.
Writing to me, it's my work. That's what I do, and a writer's consultant. So when I'm told you can't say that, and at my age, I'm going to think, yes, I can.
Yes.
I can. And that needs to get put into the book.
I earned that right.
Yes, yes. So what I self-published once. It was a children's book. It was very easy, very simple. Yes. And yes. it didn't take off. It was my first book. It wasn't the explosion I thought it was going to be. I thought everybody will love me. Yeah. Everybody will buy the book. And they didn't. So what you need, when you get a publisher, you get a platform as well. So they give you the stage to stand on. You know, so I've worked to that stage where I can now stand up and say I'm a published international author. I've got a bestseller under my wing. That's what you need. You know, when you get a decent publisher, and there's a lot of publishers out there that don't do their job, charge you an arm and a leg, but don't do their job.
Yes.
So do your research. And this is when I come into it. This is when I say, have you tried this person? Have you tried that person? I've got them on my books. I know what I'm talking about. And when.
Absolutely.
Well, when people come to you and say, will you read my book? That's when you think, all righty, I'll read your book. And that's when you pull it apart. And that's when you get in before the editor does. Yeah. So that's when you guide people. That's when you say, I don't think that can be said in that language. So can we change it?
Yeah.
And if they don't want to,
I actually wish. Yeah. So whilst I searched the world for the sort of editor that I wanted, because I was talking about difficult traumatic experiences, I actually searched for an editor who had a psychology background and found one in Spain. But having said that, I wish I'd partnered with someone like Kez to give you that bit more balance in terms of the coaching and the third person that says, well, no, actually you can say that, or you perhaps if you reworded it this way. And I know how good Kez is at this because we've done some work together on writing before. So I know as a consultant how good Kez is at that part of the process. Kez, you also do book reviews for people, don't you?
Yeah, I do. That's an absolute joy when I get their book in my hand and I give it a quick read, and then I can review it and tell the public what it's about, because everybody needs a reviewer. Every single person I've ever met that writes books or magazines needs someone to say out loud, I think this book's fabulous. And that's what I do.
Yes.
It's a free service. I don't charge for anything like that, because it's a passion of mine. No one did that for me, and so why can't I do that? I'm able to do that for other people. Why not?
Yes. And they're all on your YouTube channel, aren't they, Kez? Your little book reviews.
They're going onto my YouTube channel. Yeah. I'm having trouble with it at the moment, as we all do with Mr. Google. It'll be there.
Yes, there's a few little interesting things happening in Google land at the moment. I'm not sure quite what they're up to, whether they've just swapped the algorithms, but, yes, lots of funny little things happening with Google. I've had a few issues with my Google emails and bits and pieces, so they're up. They're doing something with their algorithms, and a few issues with YouTube and a few backwards and forwards emails, trying to sort things out. So there's something going on in Google land. But yes, Kez, going back to your publisher, I know how much you love your current publisher. Can you tell the listeners from an author's perspective what services your publisher provides for you, and why do you love them so much?
Well, she, her name's Cara McDermott, and she has I think it's four different publishing companies. I'm under one of them.
She does.
And the one I work under is called MMH, Making Magic Happen. Now, I was searching for someone that was well, was healthy, and was switched on. That's what I wanted, you know, because it's very important that when you work with someone that you're giving your book to in any way or form, that they're switched on. So I simply asked Karen to meet for a coffee, and that's how it started. I said to her, I have three books I'm trying to get out there, and they're not books, they're novels, and they're big, they're juicy, big juicy books. And she said, I'll think about it. And she does. She will go home and she'll think about it. And then she offered me a contract. And I found within, it was very exciting. I sat there and cried. I was so excited. I didn't know what, there was nobody home. There was nobody home but me when I got the email. So it was like, I'm going to sit here and enjoy it. So I had a bit of a cry and then I had a laugh and a bit of a dance. I thought, yay.
Yes.
But what happened with that particular publisher is she does what she promises. And that's it. So if she says she's going to put you in front of an audience, she does.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get a lot of publishers that will say, oh, look, I'd love to publish your book. It's a lovely book. And that's, and they publish it and you get so many books in your hand and they keep some, then you get nothing.
Yes.
Especially when you're self-published, you get nothing. It's hard work.
Yeah.
So Karen takes that off you. Now she, most publishers will say, well, look, your books are here. Let's sell them. So you do your best as well. You put the word out as well. Now, if you are camera shy, then you get someone to do it for you because you need, this is the way we work now. We work in the digital world. Yes. You've got to be able.
You need that online presence, don't you?
Or market yourself, and market your book. Yeah, market, market, market. That's what it's all about. But, you know, with this particular publisher, it's been a joyride. There's been no drama.
No, I know.
There's been no anger. It's been lovely. There's been no banging the desk and saying, you said you'd have your book here. It's been like, oh, well, when it's ready. She's, you know, it's been a dream. It's a dream.
Yeah.
You know, and I just feel absolutely blessed and privileged to be in this team of MMH. I've only got a contract for 3 years and there's 18 months to go, so I've got to work fast. So.
Can you, for our listeners who are unfamiliar with publisher contracts, can you talk about the elements that a contract has in it?
Each contract is very, very different. Now, if we go back to the book, your first contract should be with your editor. Don't let them get away with just an invoice. That's not good enough.
Yes.
You want a contract and you want to see the details of what they're going to do and the amount of words they're going to charge you for. So it all comes down to wordage.
Yes.
Right?
It does come down to wordage.
Yeah. And then after that, they may be able to say to you, well, look, I work for the White House Publishing, whatever it is, or, you know, I work for, you know, and me with myself, I've got five publishers I work with.
Yes.
So then it comes down to your contract with your publisher. Read it carefully and then get someone else to read it. Now, the basis of it should be a base charge.
Yes.
And see what they're going to do for that base charge. Because if they add something extra, that's extra charge.
Yes.
And people don't see that. People don't see, oh, well, look, I've paid $3,000 for you to publish my book and you're charging me for what? So just make sure, you know, I'm not an expert on contracts. But when I read them, I say, I think we should have an expert look at this. And I do have a couple of people that are in, you know, that do that sort of thing. And I send my contracts to them and they have a look at them and they say, this is rubbish or this is litigation or go ahead.
Yeah.
And none of us want litigation.
No.
So we pay attention. Everybody, you know, if you've got a person that's honest and knows their job, then you're pretty much on the right footage. But you really do need to, when someone sends you a contract, especially a publisher, read it carefully.
Yes.
And they will have everything numbered. One, for instance, it wasn't a publisher, it was an editor. But, oh, my God, all the T's were crossed, the I's were dotted, and I understood every word. And when I invited her to meet for a coffee, she brought the contract with her and she explained everything to me. And if you have someone that's good, stick with them because she took the time out. Because I'm not a legal beagle, and I don't understand some of the words they use. I'm going through a dictionary and thinking, well, that's a legal terminology and I don't understand it.
Yes.
And then find someone that does. that's my advice to anyone that has a, you know, people say, I'll send you a contract. Well, good, send me the contract. Mm. They don't, you know, mm. I don't say to people, I'm sending it on, but I do. If I don't understand yes. it, I do. Because yeah. the simple reason is there's some people have too many numbers and they're yes. looking at making yes. money. Yeah, they're looking at making money and they're not looking at yes. making you the beautiful author that you mm-hmm. should be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you want your work to shine. So in that contract, obviously there's a time frame. So you're looking for a time frame within that contract. You're looking at what it's going to cost you, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
And the other thing I was going to ask you, are you required to write a certain amount of books in that time frame? Yeah.
All depends on the contract. It all depends yes, so what they're offering. So if a publisher offers you a contract, now Karen offered me 3 years. And when yes. I said to her, I've already got 3 books to put out, she went, you have 3 years. What you do with those 3 years is up to you. I'm willing to publish
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
So within the next, I have 18 months left of my 3 years. Now within those 18 months, I've published 2 books and an anthology.
Yeah. Yes.
So,
yes.
And the anthology, I don't know whether that's counted because I did it with another one of her clients. So, yes. I mean, that was, again, a fun thing to do. And I got to know so yeah. many people that I've never met before.
Yes.
So yes. when we get back to,
Does the publishing contract include editing, or do you have to get your books edited separately and then present them back to the publisher?
The one before Karen, she did editing.
Yes.
She proofread, she edited.
Yes.
And then she published. Yeah. But okay. on saying that, I was paying a lot.
Yes.
And when it's called you and I both know the term fresh eyes. So when someone yeah, yeah. puts fresh yeah. eyes on your book. So the way I saw it, the first I was oh my goodness, I'm getting all this done, and I thought this was lovely,
yes,
and it was, yes. but it wasn't the right thing yes. to do. Like she should have hired the editor. Again, different point of view. She should have hired a proofreader. Mm. Different point yes. of view, and when it and, yes. and they're all making comments on your little book, and all the comments come yes. back to you, and they're all red and on a. And you're yes. thinking, oh my God, yes. how do I do all this? You know, and people yes. don't like my book. Yes. It's not at all. People are trying, and this is when it comes, you work as a team. Now, with yes. Karen's contract, I hire my own editor because I love my editor. The one I work yes. with, we work very closely together, and we're the same age. So we work yeah. closely together. Then there's the proofreader Karen provides, MMH provides for me. And then yeah. the publishing, Listen, after the editing, I sit back. I just yes. sit back and it happens. And yes. I think, oh, my God, I've got a book in my hand.
Yeah.
You know, the service yeah. you get from, and not just Karen, there are many other publishers out there that give you the same sort of service. Yes. But, you know, yes. it's sorting out what's good for you.
That's right. That's right. In talking about editing, how important is editing to a book, Kez?
Like, makes your book shine.
So important, isn't it? It's yep. just one of the key. You can write and write from write a wonderful story, but without good editing, it will never shine. And I talk to lots and lots of people and lots of authors who either never got an editor or had substandard editing. And from my perspective, it's that editing that makes your words shine, isn't it?
You really can't produce a book unless you're well trained yourself in editing. Yes. I've read some books that are real doozies, and yes. I say to the author each time, or the writer, you need an editor. Yes. You barely need an editor. Yeah. I'm not an editor. And, yeah. and it's what in my job as a consultant, I will do a very soft job. I will go back and say to them, we need to reformat this. We need to rephrase this. We need to reword this, or let's get on with it and let's do this. You know, it all depends on the writer too. And amazingly, I find the younger set are superb to work with. Their, their education in literature is amazing.
It's all important. All of those things are important in producing a good book that people are going to enjoy reading. The other thing I was going to quickly talk about today is you and I are part of Colours of Me anthology.
Yes.
That's coming up for publication in September, isn't it, Kez?
That's right, at the retreat.
Yes, and so Kez and I are part of this anthology, which is called The Colours of Me, and in September we're going to, I'm going to go to Western Australia to be with Kez in person, and we're going to launch this book, but the launching of the book will be at a retreat at this beautiful place in Western Australia, and it's going to be called a writer's retreat. Yes, Kez?
That's right, yes. Yeah. Is there a place called
and we will
is there a place called Peel Manor House? Peel Manor House. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful old building.
Yeah. And so I just wanted to mention for listeners who are looking, perhaps looking for a wonderful writer's retreat. This one will be happening in Peel Manor in Western Australia in September. And do we know yet what the few days of the retreat will entail, other than our launch of The Colours of Me, of course, but what else would you anticipate, Kez?
I've had a wee chat to a couple of the ladies that are organising it, and there's going to be the same as what there was at when there was a retreat at Crom Castle in Ireland. It's going to be a pure writer's retreat. So we will have advice from well-known authors. We will have there's an author's table going up where you'll have there's myself and four other authors, I think, ready to give advice to questions.
Yes.
There's never a dull day at a retreat. You're learning. And that's what it's for. It's to learn different techniques. Yeah. It's to learn different ways of writing. It's to learn different genres. And that's the best thing about a retreat because you're, as a writer, that's what you go for.
And it is a valuable experience to hang around with other writers. It's been a while since I've been to one, but the last one I went to was the Ubud Writers Festival in Bali. Gosh, that's 2 or 3 years ago. But, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It's giving me goosebumps just talking about it, but there were just so many sessions that you could go to. There were authors, speakers, writers, publishers, all sorts of people from all over the planet. In various rooms in Ubud. And, of course, Ubud is just a gloriously spiritual place. Ubud's kind of the place that makes you want to feel like writing. And if any of you follow Elizabeth Gilbert, you'll know that Eat, Pray, Love is set in, some of it is set in Ubud in Bali. But it is just one of those places. And I think that for writers, that energy that comes from going to a writer's retreat will boost your writing, won't it, Kez?
Oh, definitely. You learn. You know, I'm so busy writing most of the time.
Yes.
And now and again, and this morning actually, I woke up and I thought, I need a break and I can't wait for the writer's retreat. But there's 3 or 4 retreats happening over here. Sadly, I'm going along as a tutor, not as a participant, but it's going to be,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is different. But it's getting away from the laptop, getting away from your head. Yes. And when you go to a writer's retreat, you get away from what's in your head.
Yes. And it's inspired. You're inspired by different things and hearing different people's points of view. Yeah. And it actually makes your writing better, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yeah. definitely. I've been to Ubud, to a writer's retreat there many years ago, and I was overwhelmed, very overwhelmed by it all. I had to take a whole step back and make the choices that but there was at least 100 well-known famous authors there that I wanted to listen to.
Yes.
But I couldn't.
It is. I was just going to say, Kez, I was going to add that it's quite overwhelming because you have such a high level of authors and you want to, oftentimes I found, I want to listen to that person and there was someone else that I wanted to listen to. And I found myself skipping. I remember listening to Jane Caro talking about some of her books and her writing process. And simultaneously in a room down the road was someone else that I wanted to speak to. And I remember thinking, I need to go because I want to catch the other one. I need to go because I want to catch the other one. I need to go because I want to. But I was enthralled by what Jane Caro was saying. And I'm like, oh, my God, I can't get out of my seat to go to the other. So that's when those big writers' festivals, that's what happens. I've been to a couple in Byron Bay as well, and they were phenomenal. A little bit easier to get from one venue to another because you're just kind of walking from one big tent to another, but they just contribute something to your writing, your knowledge, your inspiration that just, and again, I'll just, the energy that writers give other energy, other writers is something you can't duplicate. So if you're thinking about writing or you are a writer, grab an opportunity to go to a writer's retreat because it will change the way that you write and that you think about your writing. The other thing about the retreat in September is that Kez and I are going to be there. We'll do the show live from Western Australia that week, and we're hoping to interview as many authors as we can. So if you're thinking about coming onto that retreat and you want to have an interview with Kez and I, well, that's what our plan is at the moment, isn't it, Kez?
That's the plan.
See, we might be just so like we might be just going, oh no, we need to go to that session. So yes. But we're looking, and here's, writers' retreats are not just for people thinking about writing, they're for writers who might have 10, 12 books already. They're not, they're just places, they're for everyone. So if you've got an idea in your head and you want to work out whether that idea of writing is worth pursuing, then writer's retreats should be first and foremost on your list of things to do.
Can I just – have I got time to give an example?
Yes. Okay, yes, please. Absolutely.
Okay, so I was at a writer's retreat. That was overseas. And I was given half an hour. You had to queue up for an author called Monica McInerney. Do you know Monica?
Yes. I've heard of her. Yes.
Right. Very, very famous author. I'm sure she won't mind me telling you this story. So at the door, they had a timekeeper. That's how busy she was. There was 20 of us to meet this one woman. Yes. She had a day. She had a day with us. Yes. I got my half hour, and she said to me, We had to submit the synopsis of a book before we left Australia. We all knew this was going to happen, so we submitted the synopsis, and the day came. Now I was a bit nervous because this woman is so well known for her books, and she is the most delightful person and so humble. She was just gorgeous. Now she said to me, Kaz, I liked your book. Did you ever think about writing for a magazine or doing something a little bit different, maybe writing, doing a film script? And I went, no.
Oh.
2 years. That was 2 years ago. Yeah. So she put the idea. I came home. I now write or have written for 5 different magazines. And one of my books is the synopsis to it is being made into a film, the very one that she read and said she loved. Now, how's that? Oh. Now, that's the way writers' retreats work. You meet so many people that will give you the seed of an idea. And, you know what a seed does? It grows. So that's the way writers' retreats work. You know, when someone says to me, you know, I'm thinking about doing this or that, and I'll say, well, think about it carefully because it's a seed of a thought. You know, and how it turns out, how your road turns out depends on you. Or depends on the writer. How far do you want to take this? Do you want your book to be well known? I mean, Tony, your book's well known because of what you do. You're totally different road you're on to an author, isn't it?
Yeah.
What you're on now is totally different. So this is the way
writing is going to lead to.
That's right. You know, put and your ideas of,
and your script writing is a different form of writing as well. So that's the other thing that writers need to think about. So a script is a different writing format to a book, is a different writing format to an anthology, is a different writing format to writing for magazines or writing blogs. So if you're a lover of writing, it's not just books. There's a whole range of things that you can do that will showcase your love of writing. Yes, just quickly, we've got about a couple of minutes left, but that process of writing a screenplay, because that's what a script of a movie is, how different is that to writing a novel?
Drove me insane. Drove me absolutely insane. So what I did was I hired a script writer and I said to her, can you help me, please? And so she's helped me format it so that she's actually the film producer. So, and she does screenwriting and script writing as well. So she got hold of it and said, this is the way it should look. I sort of carried on with it and she's very happy with what's happened. But, yeah, I'm not trained in that area. But next year I intend to go back to university and get trained in that area because I found it fascinating.
Oh, my
God. Who doesn't want their book turned into a movie?
Oh, wow. See, that's one of my big dreams is to, well, you know my story quite well. You also know that there's more that comes on the other side of the first memoir. And one of my dreams would be to get someone to write the screenplay or do it myself. But hearing that you can do a university course in screenwriting, that's fascinating.
Yeah. Because it's very, very different.
Yeah. So do you have to, so besides writing out the conversations, obviously, that the actors will play, I'm guessing that there's a whole range of work around setting the scene and describing what that scene looks like in that particular genre.
Mine's a beach scene that I have to describe with a seagull.
Yes.
Now I'm describing the scene. And she made my lady that's doing the film, she said to me, so can you find a talking seagull? And I thought, oh, no, I can't. So I have to describe.
Yes.
And that was my one fear, that I couldn't actually describe it so the viewer or the reader could see that what the seagull isn't actually talking, but what it's trying to get across to its human counterpart. So there's a human on a beach and a seagull. Now,
you tell me
how you describe that because it's hard.
Yes, I can see that it would be. And so that's what those elements are what then goes on to make a movie, isn't it?
That's right. Whenever you know, it's not just the movie you're watching. You're watching thousands of hours of work, not mine.
Yes.
But when you go sit in front of a movie at the theatre, thousands and thousands of hours of work. Yes. And then you think, I had to pay $10. Well, you've just paid for thousands and thousands of hours of work. Yeah, that's the way I see it so differently now.
Yeah,
It wasn't until I actually had this experience of trying to turn my, I think it was 3,000 words, which is just the synopsis of a book. And I had to enlarge it. So it was, and when I gave it to her and she read it and she went, she didn't look surprised and she didn't go, oh, wow, this is fantastic. She just said, yeah, I think we can do something with this. And my heart sank. I wanted a different reaction.
I know.
But
But that's part and parcel of writing, isn't it, Kez?
Yeah.
That you've got to be open to constructive feedback. Mm. If you see it as negative, it's going to be a hard road because you need that constructive feedback to make your words sing either in a book, or a screenplay or a movie. You can't. Rarely is there someone in the planet who can create brilliance on their own. It's with a team of people. But you know,
it's not just screenplays. Stage. What about stage work?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, what about one of my children's books? I had a brilliant idea, so I hired a young family to act out the book for me. Now they were young actors. Yes. I made all the costumes. I got so involved with it. And this is what you can do as a writer. It wasn't just writing the children's book, which I'm proud to say now remains in two palaces in Europe. It was the whole concept of this woman was a script writer. So she turned it into a play for the kids to do. And I sold out on the day. Now, how's that? Because people came to see the kids doing their work. And they realised it was a book. Yeah. It was wonderful, wonderful experience. Yeah. And that's what led me off to this one with a movie. There's so many avenues.
Fantastic. We, wonderful audience, are completely out of time. Kez and I have had so much fun discussing this wonderful idea of writing. We will be back next week. This is Radio Tony, a conversation with Kez. You've been listening to my glorious co-host, Kez Wickham, St. George International best-selling author, and I'm Tony Lontoth, and we will be back next week with another show. Bye for now.
Bye for now.